We've jumped in. Happy Saturday. Big Eddie's back big time. The on-ramp today was about Big Eddie and how Big Eddie rolls. Big Eddie's a machine, eh? Big Eddie is a machine with lots of moving parts. And I have to tell you, I'm just a little piece somewhere inside a Big Eddie, but I'm feeling the heat of that machine. I'm feeling the heat of that machine. It's not burning me out, but it is very interesting to understand some of the inner workings of Big Eddie. Once or twice this week, I actually, you know what I did? As I was sitting, I'm not going to tell you, I can't give away too much because I'm not interested in doing that today. As I'm doing my work, twice this week, I closed my eyes and I visualized my classroom of primary kids. Just to feel connected to the ground again. Just to feel like, I don't even know what to say. I needed to feel grounded. Because when you're in that big machine, you can grow wings and be lifted up into the air pretty darn fast and forget what it's like to be on the ground. So
Red Bull.
I didn't drink any Red Bull this week. Yeah, I didn't need wings this week.
Yeah, it's the Red Bull ship.
yeah.
Bullship moment. Yeah.
So I grounded myself a couple of times.
All right.
And I have to say, it doesn't hurt to come home from work and listen to my wife's experience and what's happening in the classroom, which then I'm like, well, I'm glad that I'm not doing that this year. I'm doing something different. So man, it's so interesting.
I did something similar, but it's probably, that's why I had that big, I want to share intake sound that, I made earlier. I was sitting in my classroom as well. And I had a moment where I was trying to think through, not trying, bad way to put it. I was thinking through what, because of our week one, week two framework, York Region has a hybrid learning framework. So in week one at secondary, we do period one and period two. And then in week two, we do period three and period four. And we do, it's like a, it has a feel of like a quadmester kind of a style. I had time, my period two is my YREM. So, you know, I'm working, connecting with kids, you know, working on some IEP stuff. And I had a moment where I just sat at my desk and it was probably 5 minutes, but it was funny. A colleague walked into my classroom, just right in, they were on their hall duty and they sort of said, oh, wow. Like, are you okay? You look like you're just kind of stunned. And it's funny because on the inside, I wasn't stunned. I was actually lost in thought. And what I was doing as I was on Friday, as I'm about, you know, we're getting closer to the end of the day, I'm actually going through the mental checklist of, is everything kind of in place for me to leave for the day? But I was also running through my like 2 weeks ago when I last saw, or two weeks ago when I started week two, how did that week go? So I was kind of going back through and thinking about what we did in the classroom and how the activities worked. And I'm reading again. I think I showed you that book that I'm loving right now, The Third Teacher. So I'm going back into that and a couple other design thinking books. So I'm constantly, I feel like I'm back in prototyping stage, trying to sort of figure out how I can use this room in a better way. And a part of this is also me trying to figure out if I want to move forward with this particular program. Like if I will say I want to put my name in for it again next year. And that's another little funny little bit that might be fat. I don't know. I don't know if other teachers sort of operate that way, as in, you know, I actually do have the opportunity in some ways within Spec Ed to teach very different lead, but different sort of courseware depending on where I'm positioned within spec ed. So I think to myself, is this what I want? Am I good to continue doing this? Do I want to keep doing this? Is it interesting to me? Am I good for the kids? Am I good for the parents? Good for the school? Good for the community? So that's the moment that I'm sitting in. And I was kind of staring off at one of the corners of the room. And it's funny. I felt like the conversation starter by that teacher was very much Big Eddie's voice coming in the room, commenting on my guest distractedness, my lack of thought, maybe, right? Now, this could also just be, it's compassion too. I mean, it was this person, we're good. We talk a lot. We have a lot of really great, our comeuppance through education has been, we've had some similar landing spots. So our collaboration is fantastic. Really, really dig this human, funny, energized, a good person for me. But it made me think about how we do see each other in these spaces. And the fact that I was probably, I can only imagine the look on my face was probably like this. Slightly like just totally zoned out. I was just pulling back all external emoting because I was doing a heck of a lot of work in my head. I was doing some deep thinking. And I was liking it. Maybe I had a little kind of like strange smile on my face. I probably looked like, you know, a little medicated. But I was actually just in my head, moving pieces around, rearranging the room, thinking about different color schemes for my anchor charts, figuring out, oh, do I have to sort of clean the beanbags? Like everything that was sort of like those inventories, I was kind of doing, you know, like time lapse. Pause, slow it right down. Pause, slow it right down. Grab a snapshot, curate, you know, build for the next. But as I'm driving home, I wondered, and then we had a conversation about this. I wondered if Big Eddie was still there. And I wondered if my colleague driving home, like, yeah, that was all cool, but he was totally like just not doing anything. It's a funny mindset though, eh? It's these getting caught in deep thought and not saying anything. And I think I mentioned to you about I did this very intentionally in the startup week. I would take one of the chairs from the classroom where I had placed it. Well, I sat in the students' desks first. That's what I always do. Whenever I set the desk configuration, I sit in every single chair and I look around the room. I look to see what's the line of sight. I look to see what could be a possible distraction. I try to imagine what the learning experience from that desk would be like. And I do it around the room. And throughout the week, I might just walk and I'll sit and I'll start to do, I was putting my laptop on a desk and saying, okay, if I were doing this task, I'm trying to tap into, I'm like forecasting, right? Prognostication, like what's this going to be like for the kid? But it's also for me, because it's hard to sort of empathize when you're with your design, when it's only in your head, it's on paper. Like you almost have to be in the middle of your own design. So I really appreciate that. And I spent the first week, every time I was close to the page, putting something up on the wall, I'd step back far enough to see it at a distance. And then I'd sit in one of the seats in the class to see what that meant. Even the calming room. I have on my computer, well, the sound system is on my desk. So I have like a speaker system and stuff like that. So I put something on the speaker. It was actually one of my morning meeting things that I share with the family. So I press play. So it's kind of like just me talking. And I went into the calming room and I closed the door. And I sat in the far corner and I listened to how my voice in the classroom would sound through that door. There's a whole lot of just like, they're sort of like my, I'm going to call it my tools of the trade. I don't often kind of talk about this part, and no one ever sees me do it because you tend to prep in isolation. We don't tend to prep and design in public. So maybe this is the last thing I'm coming back to, which was a bit of a surprise, that I was caught in that design moment. I was caught in a sort of vulnerable kind of a moment because I really was like, my brain was not there. And I actually didn't even notice, considering where I was sitting in the classroom, the desk, I was sitting at my desk because from my desk, I can see about 90% of the class, including into the calming room and the door to the class. I didn't see the person walk in. So I had actually almost to a degree kind of shut down my visual feeds. I was so backed in and inward looking in my brain. Now I'm going to do this again. I know I'm going to do it because it's my process. This is how I imagine through the whole course. And I'll time travel. Like I will get like 2-3 months into a school year, kind of Sudoku style, and kind of forget how to get back. But it's funny. There's something in my brain that thinks you're priming yourself for what's to come just by trying to imagine that through line all the way into the end of the class. So it's not just about if I sit in that desk and I'm looking at the white erase board, I'm not just like, does this work for this particular lesson? I think to myself, at what point would I maybe not tolerate as a student sitting in this particular seat, looking at that one view, listening to that one teacher in that one way, the student beside me in that one way. So I'm trying to think of like, how do I do the salad, the toss salad kind of a mix, right? I got to mix this up a bit. But definitely a moment of vulnerability, somebody walking in and Big Eddie's voice booming on the loudspeaker. Wow, you are so zoned. It's funny, but I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it again for sure.
I appreciate you sharing your process. And I find it fascinating that, you know, you sit in every desk and you look around to make sure you understand, that vantage point and what it's going to mean to the person who lives in that space. That's really cool. And it sounds so simple, yet I've never considered it before. And I think I will, the next time I'm setting up a classroom, I will do that. And let me tell you, I am really hoping that the next time I work in a classroom, I don't have to wear a mask. Yeah. I'm so hoping that this is the case for me. It's like, in a weird way, I feel like I escaped the classroom so that I wouldn't have to wear a mask all day. But it's ironic because when I'm at the board office with my team, I wear the mask. I wear the mask the whole day. I mean, I dislike it and I find times to take a break from it, but I'm still wearing the mask. I just don't have to do it in a elementary school setting every day. But I really hope, like, as I listen to you talk about how you set up your class, it makes me think of what I will do differently when I set up my class. It reminds me that I hope, man, we got a whole year. Can we figure out how to get these masks off our faces is what I'm thinking. And speaking of process, look at this. Ramona's chimed in. Ramona's checking us out. Good morning to the creative team behind Big Eddie and Smell My Beard. And how awesome is it that Ramona is actually here with us, because Ramona is our partner in the other podcast that we have, Talk Me Through Your Process, which I was thinking about Talk Me Through Your Process the other day and wondering what was happening with it. I know when I think leadership for myself, I'm in a really funny place with it. And you're going to love this. What's got me thinking differently about leadership and my leadership aspirations is coming directly from the job that I'm doing now. So I pulled out of the classroom. I move into like a mobile teaching, counseling type of position. And all of a sudden, again, my leadership ideas are flipped onto their side. So they are flipped upside down with the pandemic. Now they're flipped on their side because of the perspective I have in my new role. And it's like, I don't know what to do with it. So maybe, just maybe, we might be able to find a time if you two want to get back on, talk me through your process and talk about our process, because, man, the shifts are coming for me fast and furious. And I'm not going to give away any of your thinking on, but I know that you two have purposely flipped your thinking just because of the life you're living and the thoughts you're having. Ramona says it sounds like it's time to get your process team together and live again. And I don't disagree with her.
Yeah, I'm good. We can definitely make that happen. I will say one of the things that has also, that I've allowed in is mentorship. Really, really let in mentorship. And it's funny that sometimes I think with mentorship, at least from what I've noticed, it can feel like I feel like I'm craving an instruction manual. Like I'm kind of looking a little bit for a checklist that I somehow, it's almost like the reciprocity part of mentorship. And I mean, I'll give props to the team over at the mentoree, because they, I think, connected with this about the reciprocity and understood that ageism is a huge part of our assumption frame with mentorship. Like somehow just because you're older and further into a career that you get you're positionally empowered to be the mentor and someone who's maybe younger and fresher and greener in the perspective or position has to be the mentee. And I think I've had some moments where I've accepted that mentorship and wisdom can come from more spaces than just the person I'm talking to or hoping to talk to, or the people that I think I should talk to because they're already in those positions. That's kind of like step one. The second part to it, though, that has had more of an effect on me is not looking for so much, like reducing the volume and not like auditory, but the amount of space something takes up. And I took in and I spent 2 months with a statement from a mentor of mine. It just stuck in my head. And every time that my mindset and my energy and my distractibility gets me down rabbit holes really, really fast. So just checking my sort of thinking to make sure I stay with the actual provocation, which was, you do know, so this is almost quotes said to me, you do know that there are more places to demonstrate leadership apart from formal leadership. And this kind of goes without saying, like that t-shirt, I mean, you can buy that t-shirt 10 years ago off of someplace on pay for teachers Twitter, right? Like that's the reminder about leadership. But again, it's only a rule and on a checklist until you can internalize it and connect it with you know, your context, what you're going through. So me questioning how I'm going to move through it, and the formal leadership, anyone that's listening, you know, but from other conversations, sort of is the considering where administration fits, where administration as a job, as a next step fits in my thinking. And part of what came out of spending time with that question or that provocation was that I don't have a calling for administration. I have a hunger and drive, but I don't have a calling. And I've come to kind of understand that and accept that and let that sit with me now. Because if I don't have a calling, I've started to question my investment in sort of chasing that ghost. Do I think I can do the job? I believe I could. I need leading. I need some more. I need more training. I need more mentorship. But I do believe I could do the job. Could be completely misguided. Think I could do the job. Need more training? Yep. Need more resources? Yep. But I don't know if it's where I'm supposed to be. In some ways, I've started to compare it to, because I've been involved in student success, alt ed, special education, guidance, a type of co-op that's done through alt ed called supervised alternative learning, tech, taught summer school. I've had a lot of different experiences. Technically, I've done them all well. As far as a calling goes, I know I'm not called to teach geography, but I'm teaching it next semester. And I've started because it's part of the program that I'm in. I know that I'm not called to teach math, but I taught it last year as part of the Grade 9 Learning Strats program. Did I enjoy it? Yes. Was there a part of me that always felt like there was a distance? There was just a distance there that I couldn't leap. It was too, I couldn't get there. I couldn't get to making it feel like I should be teaching that. That same feeling and reflective moment is happening with admin. That it could be a job that I can do technically on paper, but I'm not sure if my heart would follow. I'm not sure. So that's just a teaser. You'll have to tune into the Talk Me Through Your Process episode. But that's it's funny because this is a part of this is a leadership conversation, if we want it to be. Because you come out the other side, it's like, okay, great. Now what? Now what?
I love how you talked about, you know, you don't feel that, you don't feel like you're being called to teach geography next semester. And I love that because it makes me think about the work I'm doing right now. Mm. And at this very moment in time, I do feel like I'm being called to do what I'm doing, which is really cool because I think what's going to break me is all the politics that go around the work that I'm called to do. The politics, the hands in the pie, like there's a lot that goes on with the role I'm in. I'm starting to see that more and more because mm-hmm. I'm exposed to, you know, it's really cool when you talk about collaborating with stakeholders. It sounds really good until you start to collaborate with the stakeholders and you start to see that you bump up against all kinds of barriers. The bumping, this is the best way for me to describe this. I love bumper cars, the ride at the fair, bumper cars. I love bumper cars. And ever since I was a little kid, there's something about that feeling of getting in the car and holding the steering wheel and knowing that you can put your foot pedal to the metal and drive that car independently. That is awesome. And every time I see bumper cars, I say to the family, we're doing bumper cars. But then when you're in the car and you're driving, the first, I don't know how many seconds are awesome until you get hit from the side and from behind at the same time and you're jolted, right? You're like, you're constantly, so you've got this excitement of, hey, I'm driving this really cool little car. This is mine to drive. But you can't get anywhere because you keep getting smacked left, right, and center with the same people who are as amused to be in that little space with you. And I've seen kids jump in those cars with the biggest smile on their face. And at the end of the session, bawling. I don't want to use the word trauma, but they've been like, I didn't know I was going to get hit from
injured. They've been injured.
Yeah. They've experienced part of that process that you're not going to leave unscathed in bumper cars. And when you talk about collaboration, And you extend the number of groups connected to that collaboration, it's messy and you can find a lot of satisfaction and joy from the messiness. But again, do we ignore the people getting hurt? Do we ignore the difficult parts of it? I feel if you do, then you're not honoring it. Yeah, I think more comes out of it to say to people, you know what, I don't think what you're saying there is fair, or try to look at it from my perspective, or people saying to me, you're not seeing this from my perspective. I need you to look at this from my perspective for a minute, right? But it's bumper cars, yo. It's decoded bumper cars. Everybody wants to talk about it, but once you get in the thick of it, it can get messy and it can go in different ways. Like my team, three people. And when we get into it, it's hardcore and it's only three of us. What happens when then you involve parents and students, the people at the heart of the work I'm supposed to be doing, and other stakeholders in the high school that have their own role to play in the high school? Like, it gets messy fast. It gets messy fast. I'm not saying it's horrible, but I'm saying let's not ignore that people do get hurt and not everybody can have their way. And that's just the way it goes. At the end of the day, you hope that the kid gets what they need. Because if they don't, then what's the purpose of any of this? But anyway, yeah, decoded bumper cars. So Ramona, hashtag smell my beard, hashtag Big Eddie, hashtag decoded bumper cars.
Yet yesterday we were at the skate park. My kids have taken to wanting to go there on Fridays, which is really cool. It's really cool. On one hand, it's a funny moment when, you know, I'm around other parents or, you know, my colleagues are like, so what are you doing on the weekend? They're like, we're going to the skate park. And then they kind of go, oh, are the ice rinks open? And like, no, it's not ice. It's skate park is like skateboard and scooters. Like, oh, that's a thing. And then you sort of say, yeah, we like to go to one in Uxbridge. It's cool. It's a pump park, which means it has like a street course there as well as kind of like an endless looping trail that you can go around. And the pump part means that it's really nicely paved. And as you do go over the rollers, you're actually compressing and lifting up and compressing and lifting up. And you can go around this whole path without ever having to pedal. You just are sort of from it. It's equivalent of what you do on a swing. I think it's the same physics as in you sort of like, as you come forward, you're bringing your legs forward and you're going to swing farther that way. And as you go backwards, you're pushing your legs backwards. So you're increasing your momentum. It's in Uxbridge. It's a great place. But just, it's funny when I mention the skate park, people automatically are thinking, I think it's just more my community. They're thinking hockey, which is cool. Or maybe figure skating. I don't know. The thing I want to mention is yesterday, my daughter's been working on connecting turns. So on her skateboard, so my son rides a scooter, my daughter rides a skateboard, sort of like a cruising board. It's a shorter board, but it has softer wheels and it's really, really super smooth. So it just has a little bit more length than like for street courses. And it doesn't have a nose and a tail flip up. It's just on the tail. So folks, tail is the back of the board, but the front of the board is kind of flat. Looks a little bit like a surfboard with a tail on the back. Anyway, she's gotten pretty, she's very good at it. But she's been doing the upper part of this loop, which is fairly flat, with only a few compressions to go through it. What she's been trying to do is get through the middle. And in order to get through the middle, I guess if you have to imagine, the turns on the upper are flat and really you've got 90 degrees to make the turn. The turns in the middle of the skate park, you probably have to make a hairpin turn on about maybe 45 degrees. Like it's that fast coming back. So what you have to do is you have to go higher up on the wall. So it's a different type of riding. It's like the equivalent of surfing, right? And this is where we talk about carving, sticking to your board and making the turn. So she finally yesterday, she made one of the turns and she did it on a difficult side. She did it on her heel side as opposed to the toe side. So when you do a turn on a sidewall on your heel side, you're kind of blind. Like you don't necessarily, like you have to look right. She rides goofy foot. So left foot forward. So she's looking over her left shoulder just to make sure that that turn is there. It's different than if she were making a turn on her toe side, because she can see the whole turn that she's going through. So you have to plot and plan really, really well. There's a whole lot of really cool, you know, body mechanics, physics, good tech, confidence. Like there's peace of mind. Like there's a lot of stuff that's going on here, right? She finally made the turn yesterday. She made the turn. And continued, had enough energy to sort of continue through a few of the pumps, but she kind of stopped. I think she was excited. She's like, okay, like we want to celebrate. Like I'm screaming and cheering, right? Anybody that sort of follows my Facebook feed, it's there. It was really, really cool. There's some footage of my son finally getting some air on some of the compressions too. So it was very good. She then went for another run. She wanted to try it again. And she fell pretty bad. Exact same spot. And the type of fall that you go, it's a parent catch your breath fall. Now, my kids are geared up. They wear all the right gear. It was still the air knocked out. There was still a little bit of road rash. There was still the stunned that the skill wasn't reliable and stabilized. Some sadness, some emotions there too. And it's funny, I'm going through what I just listed is not only my child, I was going through some of those similar. I was mirroring and feeling it was the exact same thing moments, apart from the road rash because I didn't hit the ground. And I started to think about, I mean, afterwards, I was thinking a lot about mistake making and that idea of, I'm going to try and tie it to the bumper car factor. The perception of the mistake in this particular manner was partially skill, but there was no specific person apart from my daughter that really was in charge of her falling. So she had to own the decision and the path and everything that happened. And I start, when you're talking about the idea of collaboration and bumper cars and kind of bouncing off someone, I think the fascinating X factor here is that you're actually seeing the person that could potentially make you fall. And it changes, I think, how we work together. And when you were talking about the bumper cars and I started thinking about her fall, so the end to this is she got, we talked it out. We did some breathing. She came back down. She was ready to go. And then she did two more laps, but back to her original line. So the top of the bowl, she went around. My son did a few more laps and we're like, okay, let's out. We're going to go. And we sort of figured that it was a good way to end, not with the final memory of the crash, but a slow ride just to kind of like, you know, to work it off. Right. But as you're telling the story, I was thinking about, you know, bumper cars, how different of an experience it might be. Because part of the thing that you didn't mention in your bumper car experience was you obviously feel you're getting bumped, but there's a secondary set of feelings about how you feel about the person that bumped you. And thinking how different that experience would be, and, you know, Wonderland, take this and go with it if you want. Like if it was bumper cars, but partway through your time, the lights went out. And you had to drive around in the dark for a little bit. And the lights would come back on. And you'd be like, oh, now I see where I am. And you try to correct, right? But I think there's a really, that was me just like riffing on your idea. But I think part of this, what I was starting to kind of play with is that when we get in these collaborative settings, and I will say skateboarding, longboarding, is when we talk about collaboration, we often think about that kind of collaboration that's between humans. But there's also a type of collaboration that's with environments, with our tools, with our sense of self. Like, I think we start to get to almost like that word of synergy. Like, how many things are you able to draw together for a common pursuit? So I do watch my kids as they negotiate this skate park as a type of collaboration, and their ability to sort of move through it and create something which is scootering and skateboarding, and looks quite beautiful when it's like, when it clicks, it looks amazing. When it doesn't click, it still looks pretty good, but there's a different feel when you're in your flow. And I started to think about the idea of collaboration, how we feel when we feel like we have the autonomous control over the collaboration, like we have more of ourselves in at stake, and it's only us against our equipment, our gear, the environment, in some ways the non-sentient part of collaboration, and how different it feels when we include humans in there. And our expectation is that I think we forget about the human in that space also managing their own set of collaborative tools at the same time that they're collaborating with us. And then you land at backstory. This is where it kind of spits me out. So I think part of what Big Eddie does a really great job of doing is keeping us from really, really seeing other people's backstory and how it's feeding into any given moment with each other. And I think in some ways it probably even inhibits the effective use of backstory because of, you know, this thing has to be delivered by this point. We're going to put mixed groupings together without really any opportunity to get to know each other first. Like there's a whole work ethic that I think might trump backstory. Now, just because you go, you know, bumper carring with your family, which you pretty much know their whole backstory, if they choose to turn and smash into you, I don't know if their backstory's going to make you feel any better, right? You're either going after them or you're just like avoiding them, like, right? Like there's not a lot of middle ground there. But maybe the recovery afterwards is where the backstory helps. So the fact that you're able to sort of stick with them afterwards and talk it out. You and I are in very, very different collaborative spaces. In some ways, I'd like to go back to that colleague and talk a little bit more about, I think I want to know more about what kind of fed into them and how they saw me sitting in that room. Like, I think I want, because I felt like they gave me a little bump. And there was a little bit of energy, a little bit of laughing. We did talk a little bit, but I feel like they gave me a little bump. And I don't know if I know them well enough to know where that bump is coming from, but I feel like I want to. That was a long ramble. You know what the heart of that story was? I'm proud of my kids for what they're doing at the skate park. There we go. There's the nugget. And I love that I was there for what they were able to do. My little dude is trying to work on dropping into the big pool. Like there's a big pool there. There's a smaller pool. And again, for the folks that are listening, these aren't ones filled with water. They're meant for sort of skateboarding and scootering and BMXing through. So he's working on dropping into that. For any of you out there though, and there's coping on the top of the actual big pool. And coping is like, would you call it like piping? Kind of like, it's like,
yeah,
like
a the trim. Metal pipe.
The yeah, trim. It's the trim around the top. And going over the trim is different than a bowl that you can just roll into. So it's good stuff. I hope I lit up your skateboard thinking. Like, I hope you're, as you start listening, that you're like, you're thinking you want to go get a board, get on a board, go boarding.
It's been a long time since I've been on a board.
Dude, the next time we do the food crawl, I'll bring some boards with me. I have my longboard, and I'll bring the one if you...
I don't know. I miss my stereotypical skateboard.
I have the shortboard too. I do have a regular skateboard. If I could bring that.
The place where my son and I go to get his skate sharpened and buy his hockey equipment, They recently started selling skateboards.
Cool.
I remember I walked in one day in the summer when, man, COVID, the back and forth of COVID is like, I don't even know dates and times anymore.
Yeah.
COVID closed this store down because we weren't allowed to go in it. And then it opened it back up. So then when my son and I went back in to the store, I said to the guys working, because we're all familiar with each other now, because my son and I are in there all the time. I'm like, when did this come? When did you guys get a wall of skateboards? He goes, well, the owner's son or daughter's into it. So he thought, why not? I've got the space. Why not get some product in? And if people come for their hockey sticks or for their baseball equipment, they can get a skateboard if they want. And I was like, that's friggin' awesome. Like, it reminded me of when I was a teenager, and like they've got the glass counter with the stickers and the wheels and the trucks under it. Like, it reminds me from when I used to go to the skate shop. But anyway, so you talking about your awesome experience with your kids and all the learning layers within that experience. It reminds me of a conversation that I just had last night with a good friend of mine. And this is basically what it is. We're sitting, so our kids had skating last night. So the kids are on the ice skating. And it's relatively late for me. It's like 9 o'clock. And I'm like, we're talking. And he said something to me. Like he said, he's like, how are you doing? How's it going? What's up with you? We haven't had a chance to really talk. And I'm like, you know what? I'm at a phase right now. I don't know if it's a phase. I don't know what you call it. But I'm at a point where the only thing I am looking for out of life right now is to really have moments with my family that make me feel like I have a family. Right? So, because the one thing that I'm going to miss from COVID times is that I was privileged enough to be able to live a comfortable life within the house I have with the family I have and be close again, because we lost some of that closeness with the busyness of life. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, some people think COVID's gone. And it's not, but some people think it's gone. And so they're starting to ramp up the world again. And in the world of competitive hockey, like, you're out a lot. There's a lot of practices. There's a lot of games. There's a lot of expectations that don't come from just regular house league hockey. And when I was driving my son last week, my son had 6 straight days of hockey. And I was like, here it comes again. Like, here comes the, I get home, I make him something to eat because I won't have time to cook the full dinner for the family, but I need to feed him to fuel him for his ice time. Mm-hmm. And it's all about timing. If he's going to be on the ice at this time, he should really eat at this time to make sure he doesn't feel unwell and to make sure,
yep,
like, it's crazy, right? So I'm literally coming home from work and I'm not cooking for the family because I won't be home to eat with the family. Like, that craziness is starting to kick back in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so last night, as I'm sitting in this arena with a good friend of mine, I said, dude, I just want to keep making these moments, these memories. And he's like, well, give me an example. And because he was talking about stuff he had done this summer along the same lines. Like, he's just with his family doing this thing. And he takes the moment. We've talked about this before, where you take the moment, you step back and you look at what you're doing and mm-hmm. what you have, and you are mm-hmm. completely appreciative of the moment.
Yep.
You fully understand that this is a moment that you need to capture this moment, because these are the things that at the end of your life, this is the currency that you have as you leave.
And you also know in that moment, which is the sort of life and death, dark and light, good and bad, that this moment will never happen again. So existing in it gives it dignity, right? Like, you know that it's you know, similar things will come around. You know, that type of presence and mindfulness takes a little bit of practice, but I think people have, they connect with it. They connect with what you're describing.
Even when you say you have an experience that won't happen again, this is the beautiful thing about life, because my kids will have those experiences, and they, because they're kids, they don't understand that this experience may never happen again.
Mm-hmm. So
they experience it and they think, I can't wait to do that again. But they don't necessarily know that it may never happen like that again. Like, it's okay. I'll give you, okay. When we were in the middle of COVID and my wife and her sister rented a cottage, and we had that beautiful cottage in the middle of nowhere that had, that's the cottage that I went to where I got to visit you in Newmarket.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about that cottage the other day. I don't know what I was doing. I think I was stressed out about something, and I just stopped and I thought about that time. And oh my God, in the middle of this horrendous pandemic, we found a place where we could be normal again and have all kinds of fun and make all kinds of memories. And then, you know, it was one of those things where everybody was like, well, we'll come back here next year. We'll do the same thing. And then my wife finds out that the people who own the cottage are not renting it out anymore.
Mm.
It's like, so all these things we did that the kids think we're going to do again next year, it's like, no, we're not, because we don't have access to this place again. Yeah. I knew that. Like, as an adult, I know, milk it, because you don't know if it's ever going to happen again.
It's funny. And I think probably one of the criteria of being the parent comes with, in the moment that you're in, accepting the fact that the moment will not come back around. I think it's the gift of a child that, as they're saying it, like, they're not saying they want to be at a cottage like that. They're not saying they want to be at a lake like that, or have a, it's not a comparison. It's a craving. And that's really, really different, because they want the exact same marshmallow, music, fire, conversation, jokes, connection that they're having right now. And there is no other way. That is what they want. And we see this all the time with sort of like students as well, that we give them a simile. We don't give them the actual. And kids are looking for the actual. I think as an adult, we settle into the simile. We settle firmly into the simile. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think that's just how we mature into the world. It's a little bit of our wisdom. And it's not the next best thing, because every single thing you like is the best thing. But you recognize that adults settle into the simile. We don't have the privilege of accessing the actual in the same way anymore. It's not the same. It's similar, but not the same.
even at work, like in my new role,
yeah.
I'm finding those moments and I'm recording them.
Yeah.
The cool, like I was telling my coworkers, so we walk into the board office and, you know, they take the elevator up and I'm like, I'm taking the stairs. And they're like, why? I'm like, because I want to experience this building. I don't want to walk into the building, take the elevator, walk down the same hall every time to the room where we're meeting. Like, I want to take the stairs. I want to like see what the second floor looks like. So I'm that dude, right? I'm probably going to end up somewhere in the board office where somebody's going to stare at me and be like, what are you doing in this corner? Who are
hey,
you?
Hey, Rando. What are you right. doing in here? You're random.
What are you doing here? And this is funny. I got to show this. So Irma Luis says, yes, the stairs, because Irma works at the board office too. She's our
hey, Irma. Consultant.
And yeah, like I want to walk around like the third floor. I'm constant. Mm-hmm. That's where like I'm housed. I'm like experiencing different corners and stuff because I'm like, what is in this corner? You know, who works over here and who works over here? And I want to.
There's something gleeful, eh? Like that's yes. the word, like you're gleeful. You're like peeking around corners and it's that balance between what if I get caught and I have every right to be here. I'm a board employee. It's glee. Right. It's pure glee.
But it's even, if we could take it to the next level, you're going to love this. I know you'll appreciate this. I don't know if Irma chime in if you know what I'm talking about. So the one day my team and I, we were leaving for lunch or something. We walked, I said, let's take the stairs. Like I'm not, first of all, only two people allowed in the elevator and there's three of us. I'm like, well, I'm not taking the elevator, but oh, okay. Irma jumped in. So I got to see, she says, by taking the stairs, you have the opportunity to see and meet.
Totally.
People. Very true. Irma, I'm not interested right now in like purposely walking into people and saying hello, but I hear what you're saying. So I'm like, let's take the stairs. So we take the stairs down to the street level. And then I see the stairs keep going to a basement. So I look at my team and I'm like, when are we going to the basement? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, this friggin' building, which is an old high school, St. Mary's High School, it has a basement. Like, I got to get down there. And they're like, what are you going to do in the basement? I said, I don't know.
I don't know yet.
I want to go to the basement and I want to see what's happening down there. Mm-hmm. And they're laughing at me. I'm like, so I'm thinking now, you know, the basement's got to happen either before my workday starts, lunch, or at the end of my workday. Cause mm-hmm. I don't want to be like, dude, like it's 1 o'clock. Why aren't you working? I don't think that will happen, but I don't right. want that to happen. So
you do the basement on your time.
I'm going to do the basement on my time. And it's really cool because I told you I have like this little thing called a fob, right? It's like yep. the key that activates doors.
Yep.
My fob works at the board office. I'm still like, that's still whacked to me that I can walk up to a door that I've seen many times over the years when I'm at the board office visiting for a committee meeting or something. There's my real fob won't open the door. Mm-hmm. This fob will. And it was really funny. One day after a meeting with my SO, she's like, okay, we need to go to wherever. I'm like, okay. So we start walking. They're like, Roland, where are you going? I'm like, I tried my fob on that door. It won't open. And they're like, the SO's fob is going to work. So, you know, she gets in and all of a sudden I'm in HR and I'm like looking around like, oh, this is HR and my fob won't let me in here, but my SO's fob will let me in here. And it's just that. So I'm seriously, not only am I doing this new job, but I'm gathering artifacts of this building.
Yeah.
Because that's what I've done in every building I've worked at. Right. So when At St. John's, I know what the basement looks like. I know what some of these rooms look like because I've been with the right people to let me in and to show me, oh, this is what this part of the building looks like. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's up with, I think that's a little kid thing in me. I think like as a kid, I loved in my school, like what's behind that door? How come only certain people, what's behind that door? And now I'm that guy that's in these places and I get to see what's behind the door. So you're reminding me of like, I'm all about collecting these artifacts that I can use to get me through moments where I'm not feeling good. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know what happened the other day, but I went right to that cottage up near Newmarket. And I was like, when I came out of that, I was in a better place. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, you know, some days my work is going to be great. Some days my work is going to suck. But at the end of it, I'm going to come home and all I got is this, what's around me and the people that are with me. So anyway, that's what I told my buddy last night at the rink. And he was like,
it's good.
He was like, the way you put it is exactly like how I've been living my life for the past how many years. He goes, I bought these things so that we can go out as a family and we can do stuff. And he agreed with me, and he doesn't always agree with me, but he's like, you're right, man. Like at the end of the day, that's what's left. Other people might have other things, but for me, it's those moments of that you may never get back that the kids think we can just do that again in 2 weeks. And I'm like, in 2 weeks, this is going to pop up or that's going to pop up, or like, you don't know what's going to happen. You never really know.
I love, I'll throw down a little bit of stoicism. I know it won't come back. So I don't exist in the hope that I'll have that moment like that ever again. Life has taught me, and you know, just, you know, some of that philosophy has taught me that it actually does not come back. So you need to be there for it. Right. It brings to mind too a conversation, Jen Mack Brown. I haven't connected in ages, but, she told me a story about, I think she calls it something like one more ride at the fair or one more hour at the fair. And it's almost a little bit of the dark side to what I'm talking about, making sure that you're there and present. It's when you hit that moment at, let's say she, you know, you're in this fun event, you're doing something that the family's really, really loving. And so you say just one more of something, another hour, another ride. And then you may find statistically that the actual better experience stopped an hour ago and you actually should have left. You know, you're sitting in a 3-hour line of parking or someone gets hurt or, you know, you're feeling a little queasy because that extra corn dog that you ate and that one more hour, that your instinct to leave, you should have believed that the moment actually was done. And again, kids don't have this barometer, nor should they. I've started to develop it though, that sometimes to be the adult and say, this is the snapshot. We did good. It's time to go. And just a funny thing, I've had more than enough times because I've taught at different schools. I've gotten used to getting deep in the schools quickly. I find like to get connected and to make friends and colleagues and just get on the ground running. I make fast connections. But basically as soon as I, in two different schools, three different schools, more specifically in two though, where there were a lot of people there, I've had many moments of who the blank are you? And it's just because I sort of move into a space where only certain people should be there, like teachers or maybe caretakers or familiars, right? One of them at my previous school, I hadn't met the whole front office staff yet. I only met one. And I came in one day, and when you walked into the front office, there was a sort of an island filing cabinet that snacks were always on. So I walked right in past three staff administrative assistants directly to the snacks. Like I walked in the office, went to the snacks, started leaning there and just eating. And all three heads are sort of staring at me like, who's this Like I said, hello. I said hello, but I didn't say hello, I'm Clef. I was like, hello, how's it going? And they sort of like nodded like, hey, I guess they were expecting more. I just walked right past them into where their desks were, because that's where the snacks were. And I started sort of like checking out the snacks. And it was a very funny moment, because then the individual that did know me came from somewhere in one of the back storage areas and like, hey, how's it going, Clef? Good to see you. You know, welcome to the school. And then I could just feel the other individuals in the group. Oh, okay. He must be a teacher. Must be, and even the school that I'm at now, so not last summer, the summer before, when I knew that I was going there, I went into the school. I asked to go in over the summer because I wanted to go in, and like, I didn't know the footprint of the school. I've been in a few different schools and there's some similar builds, but I couldn't imagine what the school was like on the back end. And I hadn't been in there enough just as a visiting teacher. So I came and I got my keys and I asked, I'd like to go and just open classrooms and have a look around. And it was funny because a couple of the classrooms, there were teachers in there working, but the door was locked. So I'd open the door, I'd come walking in, and there's the, who the blank are you kind of look. I'm like, hey, I'm Clef. I'd sort of just kind of look around. Nice to see you. Go back to work. I was just sort of checking out the school and I'd leave. And I can only imagine what some of them thought. One of them afterwards said, I had no idea what was going on. Some random walks in, says hello, and walks away. But I was asked by a couple different people. The pleasant one is, hey, can I help you find something? And that's the investigative, like, are you supposed to be in the school? And I'd say, no, I'm good. And then they'd sort of stare at you. I'm like, I got keys from the front office. And then that usually is like the, oh, okay, you ain't getting keys unless like you're approved to have keys. But I like that moment. I like that moment of your thing about the curiosity. I've even rode the elevator because I wanted to. I wanted to try the elevator at our school. And people are sort of looking at me like, why are you on the elevator? And I know it's just because I want to see how slow it is. I want to have that experience of doing the elevator. So I like that.
Yeah, man. It's, I don't know.
That's, it's glee. It's glee, dude. That's where it is. There's
something totally really cool about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It's like, here's another one. Like, so there's on the first floor, there's the area where all the SOs are, right? It's like SO Alley is what I call it, because it's just one long hallway of where the SOs do their work. And I don't walk down that hall for fun. So every opportunity I have to walk down the SO hall, I take. So it's like the first couple of days we were at the board office, we had a room. The room that we were using was in the SO area. So it was even, we didn't really know until we figured, we're like, can we get a room like on the third floor from now on? Cause we don't want to be using their bathroom. Like, it's just very interesting. Right.
Yep.
When I come down the stairs to leave, to go outside, to get some fresh air, there are the doors that lead to SO Alley. And I'm like, not doing it unless like I'm being chased by someone trying to kill me. I'm not running down that alley unless, you know, we're with someone who's like, let's go. We need to go meet with so-and-so. And it's so cool. They open the doors and I'm literally like, I'm looking around at everything. I'm like, this is where they work. This is what they do. This is where all the admin assistants are. Like, it's very interesting.
It's like that scene from Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Well, they've shown it time and time again. Okay. It's like the sudden view of the island.
Okay.
And all the individuals that hit the island, they're like, wow. And there's like, you know, Brontosaurus kind of walking by and a pterodactyl. Rah! But you're walking in and it's like, maybe things are shiny. Oh, what's that flashing light over there? What's that sound? Oh, maybe they even have a snack filing cabinet there. You're like, oh, what's on the snack cabinet? The wow factor.
So anyway, yeah, that's it's good stuff, man. Thanks for, I feel like we started with Big Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm leaving with having gone down memory lane as we've been talking about different things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's cool. It's good.
It was good to take last week off. It was purposeful. We both had stuff. Both had dad life stuff. So that happens. Mm-hmm. Not week as in the work week, just off from the pod.
Right. Imagine they took the week off.
We took the week off because I had dad stuff to do.
Oh, that's cool. Now I see the anchor is From here, it looks like it's going in water, but those are words, aren't they?
Yep.
What kind of words are they? Like, what does it say?
Habits.
Oh, gotcha. That's really cool, Clough. Ramona says, I like walking through our 96-year-old high school and thinking about how things were used in the past or how they looked before the various additions. And Reno's thinking about the people prior. 100%. It's, I wish that I could have, in my board office, which is an old high school that's been renovated, I wish that I could have seen what it was like before it was renovated. I wish I could have walked through the high school. It's really neat because some parts of the building are still like the original brick. In some places you see it, it's exposed. It's really cool, but yeah, I mean, I don't have that. I know that the old board office before this one, people say to me, oh, there was a board office. I'm like, yeah, that was the board office. It was an old elementary school. And then they, somebody had decided that it was no longer a safe building to be in. But I remember going there for meetings and stuff and thinking, this is the board office, you know, and now it's like totally times 10 what it was before. But it's just cool stuff.
This actually got me thinking. So this hoodie I've had since my first year of teaching. And Williams is actually, that's G.W. Williams. It was a high school that I started teaching at. I think it was in my second year, I noticed a door opened at the front of the school. Like caretakers were going in this door, and I had never really noticed this door before. So I walked up to, you know, when one of the caretakers were going in the door, I was like, hey, you know, what's that? And it was a staircase to the basement. I was like, oh, cool. And you kind of stood there for a second, and the caretaker's like, you want to come check it out? I'm like, yeah, I'll check it out. So we go down and we get to the bottom of like this concrete set of stairs, a narrow set of stairs. And I can see near the bottom of the stairs, there's like buckets, like the big buckets of like soap and floor cleaner. So they're using it for storage at that point. I was like, oh, okay, kind of storage. And then the caretaker turns on the light and says, check this out. And just to the left, so this would be running right under the main office. So basically, just understand that this, what I'm looking at, is running directly, whatever the rectagonal shape of the office, this is the exact rectagonal shape, but underground below the office, the main office. It's a gun range. It's a gun range. So Ramona's quoting about the 96-year-old school. This gun range was down there because part of the, well, for two different reasons. One, it was part of the phys ed curriculum back in the day. Yeah. And also this school also had cadet training there. And there was still the, I don't know what they're called. I'm going to call them like the clothesline lines, because you would pull the string back and you would put your target on it, and then you'd pull the string and it would go all the way down, you know, 100 yards underneath. I don't know, what's 100 yards, 300 feet? Could be about that, because it was quite long. And there was sort of like a berm, a concrete berm that you would set up in front of, and you would sort of lean the gun sort of like there, and you'd aim down the line and you'd shoot. I was like, wow. And they actually had in the main foyer, they had a lot of commemorative plaques for World War One, maybe World War Two, maybe it wasn't World War One, definitely World War Two, but basically students that former students of the school that had served in the military.
That is amazing.
Yeah. And yeah, amazing. So Williams, I it was a cool experience. I was in my first or second year, but doing the exact same thing like you're talking about right now. You just notice a door open, and then a caretaker came out. Like, the door was open. It was ajar. And so I kind of started to walk over, and then boop, caretaker came out from the, and I thought, that's a really weird place to have a closet. And Yeah, they took me down to the basement. It was cool.
Some of my best experiences in some of the schools I've worked at is getting access to the roof and watching. At one school, there was this little custodial room, and it was tiny. There was a big sink. It was a small room. It was a big sink, and then right behind was like another tiny wall of like just like hooks of where the custodian would keep his stuff. And then if you looked up a little bit, there were stairs. So they didn't. A ladder.
Yeah.
And it was one of those ladders that didn't start on the ground, so you had to kind of like boost yourself up to get on it. And once you get up there, then there's this little space, maybe the size of this room, and then there's a door. You open the door, you're on the roof. Yep. And that's been cool. At several buildings, the custodian will be doing something. I'll say, what's there? He's like, oh, it's roof access. I'm like, can I go? And like, I love it. They're like, sure. We go up, we take a look. And then the boiler room is always really cool. You should see the boiler room at St. John's. It's like, man, it looks like it's right out of the 50s kind of thing.
Communications rooms are cool too now, because those tend to be, they look like a major computer hub. Those are really cool. Yeah, boiler room, computer room.
Roof access.
There was one more though that you made me think of that is really cool to look at. Well, any of the sort of storage spaces where it's not actually curriculum related is cool. Heck, even being able to see the caretaker, like where the caretakers, like where their staff room is, like to see where they sit and, you know, they have their meetings, like to sort of know of those spaces. You got me thinking, now I'm starting to get a deeper understanding of why you like using your drone. Because it's a way to experience those spaces.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so a couple of things before we go.
Okay.
Ramona has just said, you know, the original floors and chalkboards in the oldest part of the building are like altars for Big Eddie.
Yeah.
Big time. And then gun range, very cool. The old change rooms for the old gym were in the basement and are no longer used. When I get the chance, I love to go read the graffiti on those walls, but it's also a bit creepy.
It's cool. We had in one of the classrooms at Williams as well, it was they had, how do I even describe this? It was a chalkboard. So it was a chalkboard that actually, there was a chalkboard like mounted to the wall, but then there was a sliding chalkboard. So there was another board that hung in front of the chalkboard that you could put left and right. So you basically had three different panels that you could put notes on for the kids. The one panel that hung on the front though, was made out of, I used to always think it was made out of leather, but I don't think it was made out of leather. What I think it was a painted material that you could pull down and it would rotate around. So it was imagine a loop of material that is the same shape as your chalkboard, same size, but you could pull it around. So you could actually pull down more chalkboard and move that chalkboard. So you actually had almost four full panels. Imagine writing that many notes in a period. What was funny at the time, it was actually in our exercise room. So it wasn't in your typical classroom. It was actually in a classroom that's where all the weightlifting equipment was and all the workout machines. But yeah, I can remember. And writing on it in chalk was the weirdest feel. Like it felt like writing chalk on like an apple, like just didn't like an apple skin. Like it just didn't, everyone, any of the, you know, anybody who has ever put chalk to a chalkboard has tried that, understands that feeling, whether it's satisfying or it isn't, but you know the feeling of a good connection on a chalkboard with chalk in the same way you understand how to properly use a chisel tip whiteboard marker on a white board, right? It's a totally different feel when you're locking those letters in and it's hitting hard, but writing on that leathery board, I don't even want to call it chalkboard. I don't know, it's very strange. Thanks for that memory.
Yeah, no problem, man. That's, thanks for your time today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, last weekend was dad stuff out of the wazoo over here. A little bit high stress too with hockey tryouts, but all that, my son's landed in a good place, so it's all good.
Good.
And this was, oh my goodness, season 5, episode 3.
Decoded 5 podcast. Years of
doing this, we got no life. Big Eddie, Decoded Podcast.
Shack out back, smell my beard, empathy engines.
Decoded bumper cars.
Yeah, bitter pill, kombucha.
Bitter pill kombucha. Nobody would ever buy this stuff. I love that. That's what I love about it.
That's what's great about creating. Like, this is us. This is us sitting in this classroom, imagining what we can do next. Anyone listening in, it's like, those two are just so lost in thought. We're like, no, man, we're mapping out the future.
And then just, I wanted to say with your talk about stoicism, Marcus Aurelius has the biggest smile on his face right now.
Yep. Props to, what was it? Irma? For checking in, and Ramona for checking in too. We appreciate
you. Thanks for checking it out. We appreciate the comments. And now, you know, I wonder, when will I see Irma next at the board office? I don't know. I know where she's parked, though. I know where she's parked. She's got a pretty sweet, cubby area. She's got a nice cubby area.
Cool.
Yeah. Some people at the board office have some nice spots and other people don't. That's how it goes, I guess, eh?
Yep.
Okay, peace.
Peace, man.